This is David Mokler with Care Connect USA, and my guest today is Mr. Carl Jones. Carl's a service provider within our Tax Relief Helpline Network. Welcome, Carl.
Thank you very much.
So some listeners may be on the line with us today who may be tempted to call the Tax Relief Helpline. No doubt they're going to have some questions about how this sort of thing works, what to expect, and what kind of group might be serving their needs. So who is the kind of individual that you guys can help?
Well, David, our company can help anybody from single person that's an employee, independent contractors, corporations, partnerships. So we kind of touch on everybody who's involved with potential tax problems.
Okay, and they typically have, you've seen the whole range, I'm sure, but is there a typical range of what they owe when they're contacting you?
Most of the time, $10,000 and above, David.
Okay, because I guess if it's less than that, they can typically
contact the IRS themselves.
Sure. Okay, makes sense. And how long has your group been serving taxpayers?
Our group has been serving taxpayers in the neighborhood of 5 years, this particular group.
All right, so hundreds and hundreds of cases, I'm sure.
Yes, sir. Absolutely.
Okay. And so what kind of people are on your floor? What type of experts make up your team?
Well, we have CPAs, enrolled agents, as well as myself, tax attorneys, sales reps.
Okay. And some of these folks have even worked with the IRS before or under their employment. Is that correct?
Yes, but I've had the most experiences as far as being employed with the Internal Revenue Service.
Ah, is that a fun job?
It was different, David. I was there for 30-plus years, and I went through the whole gamut, so it was fun, interesting, unique. I could put it all in a bowl and mix it up.
Wow, you should write a book about all the stories you've been told.
I actually could, but, you know, it was fun. I had a good time, met some great people, and had some lasting friendships with coworkers from the Internal Revenue.
Wow. Were you right there based in Washington, D.C., or somewhere?
No, I was actually based in Los Angeles, California area my whole career.
Oh, okay, okay. So what have you seen? What are the most common reasons that people fall into tax trouble?
In this day and age, especially the last 10 or 15 years, I would say the independent contractor.
Okay.
I would make it simple, David, is to say, the first thing I ask an independent contractor, the very first question is, has anybody sat down with you and discussed making estimated tax payments? And I would say easily 9 out of 10 would say no.
Okay, so they owe because they didn't pay their
estimated tax payments. Yes.
And so they get a notice 1 year saying you haven't done all this stuff, and they wonder how they're going to get out.
Exactly. I mean, it's not so much waiting on the notice. When somebody prepares your return and you see that bottom line figure, that should get you ready for the shock value.
Oh, I see. Yeah.
I mean, most of them make six figures in income, and then after that, you know, the expenses aren't going to be anywhere near to cover the income.
There's a thousand and one things we all need to know when we start a business, and oftentimes the tax preparation and estimations and 941s and all that sort of thing oftentimes can get left behind, especially if it's a kind of a sole proprietor, one-man shop who
exactly,
is
and that's the main one, yeah.
Right, right. So these would be like painters, truckers, people.
Painters, truckers, lawyers, people in the medical profession. You know, there are a lot of, yes.
So those are the types of professions that people have. What type of solutions are you guys able to offer, and how do you decide which solution best fits them?
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, David. The first solution would be sit down and educate them thoroughly for where they could say, yes, Carl, I understand now as far as the different directions of how to make estimated tax payments. The IRS obviously prefers that they're a basic way quarterly. People who have up and down financial situations, I say, well, you can't make them monthly. You have people who says, well, I get balloon payments or larger payments twice a year. I just warn them ahead of time. Okay, you can do that, but be prepared. And then you have what I call the grenade pulling the pin out at the end of the year. You never know what your expense is going to be like, so you're playing with dynamite if you do that.
Right. Wow. So walk me through what might happen if somebody calls your helpline and they owe something like, I don't know, $40,000 in back payments to the IRS.
Well, we would go through the whole gamut, interviewing them, see what kind of income they make, when are they paid, and then go through kind of like a quasi-financial statement, go through the expenses, see what they have, and then let them know there's an offering of different programs we can get them into, get the IRS off their back.
Okay. And so then you would then, I guess, contact the IRS and maybe hold up their end of the back.
Exactly. Potential installment agreements.
Okay.
They could qualify for an offer in compromise. We can get them placed in the currently not collectible. And see, there's a misconception out there in this type of world that because you qualify for currently not collectible being placed in the hardship, that you automatically qualify for an offer in compromise, and that is definitely not the situation.
And for somebody who's just listening, might not know the difference between those two, can you give us a Reader's Digest version of how it
yes,
would
I can.
Differ for them and what it would mean?
Currently not collectible hardship means your income is exceeded by your expenses on a monthly basis. Your income could be $2,000, your expenses could be $2,400. If your expenses are verifiable and they're pretty basic and you provide proof of your income, that's an easy watch for currently not collectible. That's for somebody with no assets.
Okay.
Or assets. It could be either way around. For offering compromise, you could have five different taxpayers owe for five different in the same years the same amount. But offering compromise, you have to offer your total net worth. If you own a house free and clear, but you're upside down on a monthly basis with the example I just gave of income expenses, that doesn't necessarily mean you qualify because you have to attempt to borrow or refinance your house to pay your taxes.
Right.
So to qualify for an offer. Now, if you're denied, then there's a probability you could get an offer accepted. You could be denied for bad credit. You could be denied because, well, at your age or you have minimal income, and so many different scenarios.
Wow. So it sounds to me that if somebody doesn't know how to navigate the IRS, that just speaking with you guys might do them a good service.
It would definitely
do
them a good service, yeah.
You're going to know, you'll know how to best approach the IRS based on their situation.
Exactly.
They actually might say something out of turn and end up wishing they hadn't shared some information. Is that correct?
David, ethically, we steer any client away from calling IRS for that reason that you just said alone.
Oh.
They don't know the terminology. They don't know what to say to the IRS employee on the phone. They could be disclosing information that is not necessary, and it's not unethical to tell them that. Let me call. And you, and every once in a while, you have somebody so through, well, I got nervous when I got this notice. Why am I getting this notice? And they'll call.
Right. And even just you explaining to them what things mean probably puts them at ease to a large degree too, right?
It should put them at ease, and I will not get off that subject until they fully understand and feel comfortable with what I just gave them.
Right. So let's talk a little bit about tax liens. Oftentimes businesses are attempting to attain some financing, some funding. Maybe it's through some commercial business finance or a factoring group. Those
right.
folks might look at the credit file of the business and find that there's a tax lien sitting there, and a lot of times that can be a deal breaker. What can a group like yours do to remove the lien or its current status so that they might get the green light on those funds?
We do not run into a lot of business clients that have issues like that. Most of the time it's individuals where the lien is I guess you could say a stumbling block to get their house refinanced or sold.
Okay,
there are two different avenues as far as the liens go. That's a lien subordination and a lien discharge. Let me explain the difference of the two. The discharge of a lien is if you want to refinance the house. You don't have enough equity in the house to sell it. You want to refinance it to get a roof fixed or some pipes replaced. What we can do is submit an application to discharge the lien from the property for this transaction only. The IRS would have to get some money as part of the transaction. Let me give you a simple scenario. Let's say the roof costs $30,000 to be repaired. Let's say you have $50,000 equity after all the points. The IRS will be looking for $20,000 to go toward the taxes.
I see. Okay.
And so, I would assume that we're going to set up an installment agreement once this transaction is completed.
Okay, so that example is something quite common. That's a discharge.
Yeah, that's very common. That's very common.
Okay, okay.
I've been successful getting lien discharges done. There's a lien subordination where you have a taxpayer with possibly a first and a second, and then there's the lien, then there's maybe a higher priority right behind the lien. Maybe the taxpayer is trying to sell the house. Maybe they're trying to refi. Then it would be up to the lending institution or the mortgage company to contact us and say, hey, there's this lien. We can't complete this transaction with that lien there. And they will request to have the position changed with the lien and maybe the third trustee or something right behind the lien to go in front of the lien in order to get that transaction completed. Then again, here comes, well, okay, the IRS will be looking for some money to come with this transaction. Most of the time, the IRS has to be given funds in this transaction. They're not going to just say, okay, we'll do it just so you can get this done, and then we put the lien back in place, or like with the lien discharge example I gave, they would have to have some funds coming their way as well.
Right, right. And those examples you just gave are consumers who are looking to conduct a transaction, but the lien is standing in the way. And it makes sense that the IRS would need something to appease them to do that. Going back to what I had mentioned earlier, when a business is seeking funding and their lender goes and sees that there's a lien sitting there. So, Carl, explain to me about how a small business, a sole proprietor or LLC that applies for funding through a factoring organization or other commercial finance group, when they find that there's a sizable tax lien placed there by the IRS or state, what is it that you guys can do to allow that person to maybe get past that and solve the situation and receive funding?
Well, David, what we would do is discuss setting up a direct debit installment agreement with the IRS, meaning the liability, get that below $25,000 and have 3 straight months of direct debit payments that the IRS takes out themselves. As soon as that third payment is withdrawn from your bank account, then you automatically qualify for a lien withdrawal. What that would happen is we would do a lien withdrawal application, submit it to the lien advisory group, and you pretty much are guaranteed a withdrawal because you're below $25,000 and you've had 3 straight direct debit payments taken out by the IRS. It has to be through your bank account, and the liability has to be below $25,000. To make it easier, let's say if you're right above $25,000 and a third payment takes you below $25,000, you qualify also.
Right, right. That's interesting, and I bet the masses of small business owners are not aware of that.
I'm sure they are not.
I bet you even the factoring groups are not aware of that program.
And probably a lot of factoring groups are not aware of it.
So with this kind of recipe, I know you mentioned 3 payments, and then they're able to rubber stamp that and approve that.
Correct.
Are they always have to be monthly payments, or can they be something set up maybe
they have to be monthly.
Okay,
they have to be monthly. Because
so
direct debit payment agreements are monthly. It's
okay,
not like
so
they would take it twice a month.
Right. So we are talking about a 90-day window to...
90 days. Exactly.
90 days. Okay. Still, that's not so bad if it's a...
If I'm going to get the lien withdrawn from my credit as if it was never there, I'd be elated to get into that program.
All right. What is innocent spouse relief? Can you explain what that is?
Innocent spouse relief, most of the time, is two different scenarios, David. You have a husband and wife. That's how it is 99% of the time. The wife had to sign a return under duress where the husband just put it under her face. She's not really a tax aficionado. She has no question. Oh, okay, and I'll sign it. Then you're in a community property state. By the time that return is processed, and the IRS is sending her notices to levy her wages, even though she wasn't part of the tax issue, she can apply for innocent spouse. Or the other situation is the husband forced her signature, and she never saw that return. And I've in my inside IRS career, outside, yes, I've seen that quite often.
Sure. And even with happily married spouses, they just do their finances differently, huh?
Pretty much that.
Recently, we've heard and seen a rise in these scam calls to taxpayers from people posting at the IRS. What advice do you have for people who might be getting these kind of phone call messages on their voicemail claiming that they owe all this money and they're going to be arrested or such things?
I would tell any client, make sure you get the name of the individual and the phone number and call us immediately if they are an ongoing client, because that is a scam. People are calling these companies are calling people on nights after 6 o'clock, weekends. The IRS is not allowed to call taxpayers after 6 o'clock and definitely not on the weekends. And it so happened, you had the firm that happened to apply to the federal employee, not to the federal employee. After they heard the voicemail, they called me up. I said, that's so far from truth. Do you have the name? They said, yeah, we have the phone number and name of the person. I called that person, and it was comical conversation 5 minutes because they had no idea what I was trying to ask them.
Right, right. It probably is just a new version of this rise in scam calls across the country run by offshore operators.
Yeah.
People that are contacting people at work and being using profanity and claiming
exactly.
That they owe money and that they're going to be incarcerated and arrested at their desk.
The IRS doesn't arrest people. They say, hey, if
right.
you don't meet us at your house by such time, we will have our officers. That's the term they use. Our officers come out and arrest them. And
right.
8 out of 10, and Joe and Mary's don't have a clue and they panic.
And they unbeknownst to them, they're wiring money to some offshore operator.
And it's a scam. They're always foreign people, every single time.
So the telltale signs are thick accents and a reluctance to give up telephone callback numbers and
right.
such things.
Right? Oh, and they'll give a number. And when I called in that situation, I said, what is your ID number? Mr. Jones, that's not important. And they kept trying to call. I said, okay. First and foremost, you and I both know the IRS doesn't send out people to arrest people. Or if you don't have your client, and they were being very aggressive and forceful. I said, have a good day. I hung the phone up, and they never heard from them anymore.
Right. Okay. Well, thanks for taking time with us and filling in some of the knowledge gaps. George, thanks for being with us today.
Thank you very much, David.